Today's Teisho will be on case 48 in the Book of Serenity, Vimalakirti's Non-Duality. Introduction. Even if one's subtle function is universal, there's a place where one can't even begin to act. Even if one's eloquence is unhindered, there's a time when one can't open one's mouth. Longya was a handless man boxing. Jiashan made a tongueless man able to speak. Who can extricate himself midway? Case. Vimalakirti asked Manjushri, what is a bodhisattva's method of entering non-duality? Manjushri said, according to my mind, in all things, no speech, no explanation, no direction, and no representation, leaving behind all answers and questions. This is the method of entering non-duality. Then Manjushri asked Vimalakirti, we have each spoken. Now you should say, good man, what is a bodhisattva's method of entry into non-duality? Vimalakirti was silent. Verse. Manjushri inquires after the illness of the old Vaishalyan. The gate of non-duality opens. Behold the adept, crude without, pure within. Who appreciates it? Forgetting before and losing after. Don't sigh. Struggling to present the gem, a man with his feet cut off in the garden of Chu. Repaying with a jewel, shining bright, the cut snake of Sui. Stop checking. There are absolutely no flaws. Mundanity totally gone. That's still but a little. It's a beautiful autumn day, and I want to thank everybody for coming here this morning. I hope you had a wonderful sit. Some of you are taking your midterms right now, and that means that you have a lot of work to do, maybe this weekend, a lot of studying, and you might be under some pressure. It's possible that you'll do very, very well, and I hope that happens. I hope you study hard and you get the grades you want. Sometimes it happens that we don't get the grades we want in life, and that's difficult to take, I must say. It's really important to our identity and our self-esteem to be successful in our undertakings. That's just the truth. And naturally, we depend on our success for our self-respect. But, you know, if you cling too heavily to success, to the idea of success, and if you cling too much to your desire to earn the good regard of your friends and colleagues, sometimes that can be paralyzing, you know? Sometimes it can be paralyzing. It's very important to have goals in life, like work. You know, I think it's rather unhealthy for people not to have a job. You know, if they can't find a job, that's okay, I understand. But doing something is really quite wonderful. I went through a period in my life where I didn't have a job. That's happened to me a couple times. And it was very demoralizing just to be drifting, you know, to be able to get up at any time and sort of have an aimless day. I had money saved, so it wasn't a personal crisis. But when I would get a job, I would definitely feel better. I would definitely feel better having a structure and being able to go to work. That's really quite a gift, you know. Even though sometimes it's difficult to get up and get dressed and sit in traffic, or get up and get dressed and go to class and study all night. And, you know, really, these things are a wonderful opportunity for all of us, you know? I mean, life is really kind of empty in a real sense. It's really sort of like a blank piece of paper. And it's really wonderful to start writing on that paper. It's wonderful to start doing something with your life. And you don't know how it's going to turn out, you know. So when you come to college, you know, you've never been to college before. You don't really know what it's like. And people make mistakes, you know. People get into college and they make mistakes. They take courses that might not be the right courses for them. Or, you know, they really get into the freedom of college, you know. It's less common now, but it used to be the case that there were lots of students who would come to college. I would see a lot of students who just stopped showing up for class. They were pledging fraternities and things like that. And they would just blow their first semester. This is quite common, really. Or it was quite common. I also remember when I was in college, a very painful moment at the end of the first semester. One of the guys on my dorm was packing up and leaving. And he had failed out of his first semester at college. When I went to college, by the way, this was almost 40 years ago, they used to say, it was 35 years ago, they used to say, they took us all into a dormitory, into a gymnasium, and would have us look at each other. And they'd say, turn to your left, turn to your right. One of those people will be gone at the end of the year. And we were supposed to go, oh my God, you know. And indeed, it was designed to make us study, you know, to make us anxious and fearful. And I can remember over the winter break, seeing a guy who basically had his bags packed. And I said, what's happened? He said, well, I just didn't make it here. And I washed out. And I can still remember his face, you know. That must have been such a difficult time for him. I myself have been fired, if that's happened to me. I remember getting fired once. Because I was working as a carpenter. This was in New Mexico. And I worked there for a week at this one job. And the guy who was the contractor had really hired too many people. And so he let them all work for a week, and he was just sort of waiting to see who was the fastest. And so we all tried to be very fast, and he picked the very fastest. And I wasn't fast enough, so he paid me for my week's labor and sent me on my way. But I remember that being difficult. Even though I didn't care so much about the job, I lost some self-respect, you know. That happens to us. You know, we come into a new situation. We don't know what it holds for us. It's like a box, and you open it up, and inside there might be this beautiful gem, you know, or there might be something not so nice, you know. It might be something we don't want at all, you know, something we fear getting. Now, if there's anybody you know who has not had this experience, you know, I'd like to hear about it, you know. Because generally speaking, we all have disappointments like this in life, you know. However, I think it's important not to blame yourself. Generally speaking, people don't know what the future holds, you know. And And you could come to college and think you wanted to be a doctor, and then you could take some chemistry courses and begin to do very badly at those. And you could try your darndest and not do well. That happens to a fair number of people, right? Now, you know, they might have taken chemistry in high school, but maybe they got A's. But they come to Rutgers, where the chemistry course is much harder, and all of a sudden they're not well equipped. And they may have gone to a tutoring. They might have gone to the Learning Resource Center. But at the end of the day, they don't pass the course. Now, you know, if this hasn't happened to you in life, it's going to happen to you. Sooner or later, an experience like this will come your way. And if it doesn't, I'm so happy for you. And I'm really happy. But my guess is that there'll be some kind of a challenge like this. You know, if you write anything, sometimes you send it out and it gets rejected. That's happened to me. And also, sometimes if you're doing like a scientist, you know, your experiments might not turn out the way you wanted them to turn out. It's definitely the case that we would like to succeed. We'd like to be brilliantly successful. But it's also the fact that if we try anything new, and if we do things that aren't familiar, if we challenge ourselves, we're definitely going to have failures. You know? And so I think part of living skillfully, living happily and intelligently, is sort of developing a strategy for dealing with lack of success, you know, for failure. Now, I don't think people should pursue failure eagerly, you know. But I think it's important to have to know how to deal with setbacks and failures. If I may say so, one of the worst things you can do is to blame yourself. This is an interesting dynamic, you know, the dynamic of self-blame, because basically it's something we would almost prefer to believe that we did something wrong, rather than to think that what has just happened to us is somehow accidental or unforeseeable. I think that people have a tendency to want to believe that they can, I think it's a very powerful desire that people have to want to be in control of their circumstances. And even when they fail, because they feel insecure and they feel that they're not in control, actually they blame themselves and they say, you know, you should have done this, if only you'd done this, you know, blah, blah, blah. And this is actually, even though it's very punishing and it's very difficult, people do it because it reassures them that they have control over the situation. And what's most frightening, I suppose, is not having control. Failure is quite an interesting experience because it not only do we not succeed at what we're doing, but it calls into question our own control over our own lives. And that's quite a scary thing. But one of the reasons to practice Zen is to deal with situations like that. So when you sit down on the cushion and you watch your breath, you know, you may feel better after having a failure, you know. You may not for a little while. One of the things you have to do is learn how to unify yourself with what's actually happened. Yes? This is very important, I think. In other words, you know, when we aren't successful, one of the things we want to do is we say, oh, if only this hadn't happened, I can't believe this is happening to me. One of the things I think it's important to do is to embrace the event, you know, and say, you know, this is what has happened. This is happening to me. You know, this is my life. And I think that's quite important. You can't make the event go away once it's happened to you. You can't cover it up and conceal it. And the past can't be different, right? So we have a mind that will say, oh, things could have been different. If I had made this decision down the road, or if I'd done this, everything would have been different. If only I could have seen that. The fault was with me for not seeing that. But of course, you couldn't have seen that. So, you can sit on the cushion and go into moo, and still not feel better. This is quite the case. And I think if you sit with your koan long enough, or your problem, your failure, long enough, it's really a koan. One of the things you discover is that this is my life. This is who I really am. And this takes a lot of sitting. But when you realize it, when you realize this is my life, it can't be any other way than this, right? I think it can be very liberating, you know, to say, instead of saying, this is not the fate I wanted, this is not the fate I deserve, or instead of saying something like, if only I had done this differently, you have to say, this is my life. I embrace this event with unconditional, with my whole being, unconditionally. Yeah? And this is quite hard to do if you've just failed a chemistry test. Because, of course, what we want to do is push the event away and deny that it's happened. But you could try this and say, this is who I am. This is who I am, unconditionally. Doesn't mean I'm a failure, but at this moment, I'm a 64 on my chemistry test. And it's not really controllable. It's not. Nothing could have been different. You know, if you study for your test, you'll do better on your test. But actually, if you choose not to study enough, you couldn't have made a different choice, could you? I mean, this is quite interesting, actually. I mean, you couldn't really have made a different choice. You made probably the best choice you can make. The other day I was talking to my wife, and she was talking about her sister, whose life is pretty screwed up. And her kids have a pretty screwed up life, too. And we were going over and over again how everybody got so screwed up. And my wife said, you know, actually, I think people play the cards they're dealt as best as they can, you know? Life deals you cards, and you play your best hand with the cards. Everybody's doing that all the time, even people who make terrible mistakes. Everybody's trying very hard, I think. They just don't always get the results they want. And when that happens to you, I think it's very important not to try to renounce the event or distance yourself from the event. You know, we think if I can just get this behind me, I can go on with my life. But actually, it's still there waiting for you to deal with it. So when things happen to us, another way to practice Zen is to embrace the event. This is my life. It couldn't have been any other way. This is part of the life I have, I've been given, that I'm living. And eventually, your heart will become very still and calm. You know, if you fail a chemistry test, you might feel that this is your fault, right? But if you left the sit today and you got in your car and you were driving down the road and somebody crashed into you, we'd call that an accident, right? We'd say, oh, you had an accident. It's not your fault. But actually, probably the low grade in the chemistry test is not your fault either. At least it's not if you assume, my wife does, that everybody's playing their hand, their cards, as well as they can. It's quite marvelous to see people who are successful at what they do. It's really quite a wonderful thing. You might imagine that they are responsible for their success. But if you talk to them, of course, they worked hard. But often, things just came together for them. You know, this is really often. I mean, I know people who worked very hard on their dissertations, and dissertations were brilliant. And I know people who worked very hard on their dissertations, and their dissertations were mediocre. You know? Both of them lay awake at night, tossing and turning in their beds. Both of them got up and started working at their typewriters. I know people who wrote a brilliant first book and then couldn't write a good second book. I know such people. You know, it all came together for them at one moment, and then next time, it didn't come together. You know? And I think that's quite interesting. I mean, we're probably all a little too hard on ourselves. If you got up today and you did your best, the sitting is like this too. You know, you might think that this is it. I'm going to sit without moving for an hour and a half. And you come in and you sit down, and about 45 minutes into the sit, your legs are screaming with pain. And you finally break your sit and you adjust your posture. And you can say, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do a better job? The truth is you did your best, and things couldn't have been some other way. This I think is quite important. You know, many years ago, our Zen group decided that we were going to build a temple. We were going to buy a temple, a property, and then build a temple on it. And one of the members of our group, John Godfrey, picked such a place. He found a place up in the mountains. It's quite beautiful area, near a place called Clay Elum, Washington. And it's beautiful. Mountains, high mountains. And we all went up there, and it was like a dream come true. Because from the field where the Zendo was going to be built, you could see for 100 miles. It was like a magical place. And we sort of rubbed our eyes and thought, can this be, is this really going to be our temple up in the mountains? And we all had wonderful dreams about this place. In fact, we used to have meetings to discuss how we would develop the property. And people would argue about things like whether we were going to have windmills or not. So there was a windmill contingent, and some people felt it would ruin the physical appearance of the temple. Basically, we were really counting all of our chickens before they were hatched, you know. And we were dreaming of this magnificent place. And this is really a wonderful moment in life, you know, when you undertake a project and it's just a pure freshness and promise. And then we began to have some problems, actually, because everybody in the group was so enthusiastic about this, and they all promised to contribute money every month, to the temple. So people took shares of the temple. They bought a share. So I can't remember how many shares we issued, but there might have been more than 100 shares. people didn't actually own the temple, but they took a share, a responsibility for some part of the payment for the month. Now, I was just a poor graduate student, so I looked at the shares on the table and I didn't take one, right? Because I could barely pay for my groceries every week. But some of the more established people in the group did indeed take a share, and some people even took two. So, at any rate, once we got going, at first it made a lot of sense. Everybody was contributing, we were paying on time, and then we built our zendo. We all went up in the mountains, and we had a person donated $15,000 to us, and we went up into the mountains and we built a beautiful zendo and a kitchen where we would do dokusan in the winter. And we made the windows ourselves, actually. I was in charge of making the windows, and we did a beautiful job. They weren't sash windows, they were casements. So they opened out on hinges. And the roof had long overhang, so when the windows opened up, they were protected by the roof. And if I may say so, we did a wonderful, wonderful job. And so we used to have what we called samu sessions, or work sessions. And we would come up for session, but in the middle of the day, instead of sitting, we'd all go out and work, and we'd nail, we put the windows in, we made sidewalks, we did all this stuff. We even had sashin there sometimes in the fall. It was too cold in the winter because we didn't have a heater system in there yet. But we would do our fall sashins there, and we would wait for the wait in the dokusan line where the roshi would be in the kitchen, and we would sit in the dokusan line while snow gathered on our shoulders. So I have all these beautiful memories of this. We used to take baths. We had a bath area. We didn't have a bathhouse yet. We were going to build one. And we used to take baths in a big 60-gallon drum that we had on some cinder blocks over a fire. So we'd build a fire and we'd heat the water. And there was a bucket. And we would take the bucket and wash each other. The men went second, and the women went first. And there was a big screen, so the women could wash and clean themselves. And they had half the water, and then we came up, and we had buckets, and we could soap up in the bucket, and then there was another bucket to rinse off. So it was just a wonderful place, and I think many people dreamed of, spending the next 30 years going up to this temple. But then problems began to arise because people started leaving the community. People moved, or they lost interest in Zen. And little by little, we had more and more unpaid shares. So the debt grew and grew. And eventually, we lost our temple. We couldn't afford it anymore, and we had to sell it to some people who I think were going to put a ski resort there. That was kind of a shock. That was like a very big shock to me. At the time, I was the treasurer. We had all put so much love and kindness into this temple, and now we were going to lose it. And I have to say, I got very down about this, and many people did. For a while, I was sort of like traumatized by this, after the event is gone, after it's passed, and you do a lot of sitting, it takes on a different character, right? It's very neutral. It's like, this is something that happened to me. And when I look back on it now, it doesn't seem painful at all. It's not painful at all. It's just something that happened to me, part of my life. And in fact, When you look back on your life without fear and pain, even things that were very difficult at the time can seem quite beautiful. And you begin to realize that these things contributed in many ways to your later life, you know? If somebody tells a story that goes like this, I was born, on a sunny summer day, and then I went to college, I got straight A's, I got a job working for Merck Pharmaceuticals, I was promoted every year, we went to Hawaii every summer. In a certain sense, that sort of life sounds enviable, right? But actually, it's rather boring. Such a life would be rather boring, at least if you were trying to write a novel and the hero was like that. He said, and then I got another promotion, and then it was time to retire, and then we went to Hawaii, and then after retirement, I spent my day on the golf course, like stock money came in, blah, blah, blah. You wouldn't even get to page 30, right? I mean, usually people set the scene with the beautiful life, and then something happens, right? And something happens. So he goes into the office, he's waiting for the boss to say, how are you? But he's been fired, or something. And now the story starts, right? The story starts. So, the story doesn't really start until something goes wrong. Right? That's what it means to have a life. Now, I'm not saying you should fail your exams, don't get me wrong. But life begins in a certain way when things don't go the way we expect, when the unintended happens. And at the time, it's so frightening, it could be so frightening and so painful. But when the event has gone into the past, and you look back on it, you realize that this is not painful anymore. It's just part of your story. Right? This is part of who I am. This is part of the life I've lived. And it's hard to get to that place, but I think one way to do it is to try to embrace the event. This is my life. This is what's happened to me. My feeling is that if you respond this way to the event, you can be more creative and more clear-headed about it, As long as we're embarrassed, ashamed, panicked, and so on, it's very difficult to make a good decision, yeah? When we're in the shock of the moment, it's very hard to make a good decision. And if you sit on the cushion and you say, this is my life, this is what's happened to me, this is what's happened to me, then eventually you'll reach a point where it stops hurting you. And where you say, this is just my life. Yeah? And that doesn't mean it's not valuable. It means this is just another event that's happened to me, like the rain today, It would be insane, right, to get upset about the rain today. If only I'd done something different, it wouldn't rain, But it's going to rain. And if only I had done this, I wouldn't have had the bad grade and such. But if onlys are a fantasy, So what I'd like you to... in a way, what this koan is getting at is, you have to embrace what arises. You have to embrace what arises. And this is easy to do when it's lovely, right? Of course I'd like to embrace the happy day I just had. Vimalakirti asked Manjushri, what is a bodhisattva's method for entering into non-duality? Manjushri said, according to my mind, in all things, no speech. So Manjushri gives a bunch of words, right? Manjushri tells, it says this, 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 this. Okay. So, when something happens to you that is difficult to deal with, you know, you can say, well, this will make me stronger. Or you can say, this was a terrible, undeserved tragedy. Or you can say, I know it will turn out well in the future. Or you can say, my life is ruined, right? But really, none of those will really set you free, in my opinion. Those are just perspectives on the event. Now, if you sit with the event in mushing, sooner or later, it's just going to be something that happened to you in your life. Yeah? And when this happens, eventually, the attachment you feel, the anxiety or the fear, will go away. And this is really the path to liberation, is this kind of neutral mind. This is what happened to me. This is easy to say unless something has happened to you, you know. So, you know, a friend of mine has a physical condition that has made him quite ill. And like everybody else, he blames himself for being ill, even though, you know, that's ridiculous. And he thinks, if only I had eaten better, if only I had done this, you know. And this is like blaming yourself. Even if you studied hard for the test, you kick yourself because you didn't get the grade you wanted, right? I mean, you studied as hard as you could, right? And so my friend has these health problems, and it feels terrifically guilty, yeah, and out of control, like life is just spinning madly out of control. You know, as I say, that you can tell the story a million different ways. You know, we always want to tell the story so that it's going to end well. But you know, actually, a more effective strategy is trying to embrace, entering Mushin and trying to embrace what has actually happened to you. This is really superior practice. And it can be quite liberating, you know. I mean, we hold on, all of us, all the time. We hold on tightly. But, you know, when things don't go the way we planned, we have the chance to let go of our attachments and our fears and lead a bigger life, you know, a bigger life. But we don't usually have the courage or the self-confidence to let go. Zen practice is like helping you with that, you know. If something bothers you and you sit with it, it could bother you a lot. But eventually, it's just going to be an event that happened to you in your life. And at that moment, you really will be free.